I want to talk some more about Passover. Exodus says that there were 600,000 men, 20 to 50. And that didn't include wives or children, and didn't include the over 50 bunch, and it didn't include the mixed multitude that went with them out of Egypt. So it came to about 3 to 3.5 million people left Egypt in the Passover. Now, of all of those people, well, let's see, let's look and see. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. Verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did all eat the same spiritual food and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of the serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for examples, or for parables, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Excuse me. There hath no temptation taken you, but such is common to men. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able. But with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, my beloved, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. Now, of all of those, the Bible says only two, the 3.5 million people, only two under the promise, Joshua and Caleb. The rest died in the wilderness. The ones that came out, there were many more that entered, but they were born during the course of the 40-some years. Very little is known about Caleb. Except that he and Joshua were two of the 12 spies that were sent in on the 39th year, or maybe not the 39th year, excuse me. On the second year, after leaving, they reached a place called Kadesh Barnea. And Kadesh Barnea is a word that means sanctuary in the wilderness. And so that's where they stayed for 38 years. Because Joshua, because they sent the 12 spies. Let's read that, Numbers 13. In the first part of Numbers 13, they chose someone out of each of the 12 tribes. And I have made a mistake before, and when I told you about Caleb, I said he was a Kenite. It's not true. He was a Jew, and he was from the tribe of Judah. Who was Joshua then? Joshua was the son of how come I can't find Joshua?
Verse 16.
Oh. Was Nun the tribe of Judah as well?
I don't know, and I didn't look it up. But anyway, the two Joshua became obviously massively famous. He took over when Moses died. He's directly in the line of ascension genealogical line of Christ. He married Rahab, the harlot that was from Jericho. And then they had Boaz, and Boaz was, you know, from what we read last month in Esther. I mean, Boaz was later. That's what we're going to read in Ruth. But Caleb is not mentioned a lot. But let's look. Start in verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward and go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, many or few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and whether what cities they be that dwell in, whether they in tents or strongholds, etc., 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 etc. And let's go on over to verse 26. Well, that's not. We got to read it. I'm not doing too well. If you can maybe obviously tell. Verse 20. And what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood there or not. And be ye of good courage, and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rahab, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came into Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came down. That's Damascus is considered the oldest city in the world, and this one is the second one. What'd they say? The second one was Hebron, and now the third one was Zoan in Egypt. The rest before this, people didn't build cities; they just wandered. They were hunter gatherers. And they came down, in verse 23, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought up the pomegranates and of the figs. And the place was called Brook Eshcol, because the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence, and they returned from searching the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and to all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses, and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went with him, up with him, said, We be not able to go up against them, the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land which we have gone to search is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain, and let us return unto Egypt, into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us as a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But the congregation wanted to stone them. So they stayed in that place, on Kadesh Barnea, for almost 40 more years. Now let's assume for a minute I'm right in what we teach. In that land of Canaan was a metaphor, it was actually there, but it was a metaphor also for the seven tribes, the seven mountains of our mind, the Sanhedrin that exists up here that we've studied so often. Let's assume that the only thing we have to do is rest, and all this crap will be defeated. That's all we have to do is enter the rest. We don't have to scheme anymore. We don't have to plan anymore. We don't have to figure things out anymore. We enter the rest. I've been saying that now for 40 years. But we still find reasons, good ones, just as they did, for believing that we can possess the land in Christ's name rather than in the evil one's name that we've lived in so long. We can leave cause and effect forever. We can leave any and everything behind and have only peace of mind. We give no thought for anything. We live by faith. That's what this happened to them for us. And just as Joshua and Caleb had spied out the land and saw that it was a good land, and there were issues to be dealt with, but God would deal with them rather than them. But Joshua and Caleb couldn't go up until the company went up. They couldn't go up until all of the people that were alive at that time that came out of Egypt had died. So Joshua and Caleb waited until that generation of people that had rebelled and rebelled and rebelled had died. And then they went up. Now that's what we just read in Corinthians, that happened for our example. And it's the type, they were protecting the seed. What were they doing here? Seed of who?
Seed of Christ.
No. Eventually, remember the
yes,
flood happened? Well, I understand, Pete, but remember this flood happened because they were protecting the seed of Adam. Now, what's happening? Because is Abraham in the picture yet?
This point, he had to be in the picture at this point.
Okay, so what have we said? First, it was protect the seed of Adam, because Adam had given the possibility of the innocence being transformed to holiness by antagonism. Then, it was protecting the seed of Abraham, because God had chosen the one family that would represent the whole human race to complete his mystery. And all failed. And the picture here is to show us that many are called, but few are chosen. Now, more than anything in the universe, I want each of you to be the chosen. I believe you are at this point. But we must follow the example herein of Joshua and Caleb, because that happened as a parable for us. So now, after the cross, we protect with all costs the seed of Christ, the mind of Christ, if we will. But it's the seed of Christ that's being protected. And it's being protected from the evil one that is you. So that you no longer use this thing for your sustenance. You no longer are deceived by the voices that this Sanhedrin that always talks to you says. That you sit down, that you wait, that you enter the rest. You enter the Sabbath day. Without any justification. Again, if you don't feel like you can, then you have to take the lowest seat. You have to say, Father, I don't know what else to do. Help me. Show me. But you can never justify using your mind again. The just shall live by faith. Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. because it's of sin, of the evil one. That's now the meaning of Passover is really you are celebrating your death and the death of this evil one. That the resurrection of Christ would be real and tangible to you, and the Word will be made flesh within you. That's the purpose of Passover. Now, I believe every one of you know that the stuff in the world isn't working. It hasn't worked for anybody. You may not even believe me, but consider the possibility that it's right. Consider the possibility that these tribes that they defeated are the parable of our mind. The last one to be defeated were the Jebusites. Because the Jebusites represent the expectation or the hope of some good thing. Some good thing that you have invented. Because I believe that in the destruction of these guys, the first one has to be destroyed is the last one that was destroyed in this. In the Bible. The seven tribes. Let's go there. Go to Joshua 1. Or 2, I think. Somewhere on. Joshua 3. That was close. Close doesn't count.
Missed it by that much.
Huh?
Missed it by that much.
Verse 7. I said they're just about ready to cross the Jordan and to defeat the first one that was to be defeated. It was of the city of Jericho, but it was the entrance into all the rest. Verse 7. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day I will begin to magnify thee in the sight of Israel, of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. Now again, you understand, Moses was the figure of the law. And Joshua is the figure or type of Christ. There's no accident he married a harlot. Because that's what we are. Does everybody understand that? And thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when we are come to the brink of the water of Jordan, you shall stand still in Jordan. And Joshua said to the children of Israel, come hither and hear the words of your Lord, the Lord your God. And Joshua said, hereby you shall know that the living God is among you, or within you, is that what it actually says, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Seven tribes. The last one is always mentioned as the Jebusites. Because it means, and it's the expectation of some good thing other than the resurrection of Christ. In the New Testament, the hope... I think the word hope is used once in the Old Testament, and it means being in it's a crevice of a rock while a storm is going over you. Because the hope, what yet wasn't revealed to the flesh, the hope of Jesus Christ, the resurrection. So our total hope in the New Testament, the word hope is never used except in regard to the resurrection of Christ. And it's the resurrection of Christ in you. That's the end of all hope. Well, then they went on and passed over and defeated all the tribes. Joshua defeated all the tribes, all those seven tribes. I could go in a long history about why I believe that the Jebusites should be everything that all the activity up here, the idea of the expectation of some good thing, all is in every area of those seven tribes. So that's the basis. It's self-realization. Something good is going to happen. And the hope of that good happening that you consider good is the power of all of the rest of the activity up here. Can you see that? If you can come to the place where all that is gone and only the resurrection of Christ is your life, then a strange thing happens. When you live by emptying at all times, you alter the universe. You alter your life. You alter the surroundings around you. Without you doing anything except emptying. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus Christ. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they rest from their labors and their works do follow them. They have no idea what's going to happen next. And whatever happens, something happens and their works follow them. There's never an agenda, there's never a plan, there's never an idea, there's only faith. And the expectation of some good thing is more and more and more and more of the revelation of Jesus Christ, and that is it alone. Now, all this is what this mystery of Passover is about. It's about you finally putting this thing to death, the instead of Christ in your life. Anybody have any response? So everybody agrees. That's why the default position is always the evil one. Because he resurrected from his deadly head wound. As long as you give breath in any regard to what your mind or emotions say, then he stays resurrected. And you just know about this by philosophy instead of a word being flesh. But if you understand that the default position is the evil one because of his resurrection from the dead, until you know to completely ignore it, and believe it or not, the voices stop. Then what happens, the voices come again when you run into something you don't understand. But then you always then repent again, because that's, you know, you've resurrected this evil one. Does this sound like a fairy tale? Is this comic book theology to you? Has anything else worked in your life? pray, see, and understand, and live in this mind of Christ that always empties. John?
I believe that when self and ego are removed, you can alter the universe.
And that can only happen by emptying the mind of Christ.
The universe is the way that we see it. Whether it physically changes or not, I could really care less. I do believe that if I see, as he's saying, that the universe is altered as I perceive it, that's the only one that really counts.
Well, I mean, it's... It's the eye of a hurricane analogy. And if each one of us would empty...
A sign and a wonder.
Huh?
A sign and a wonder.
Right. You don't do signs and wonders. You are signs and wonders. You may do some event every once in a while. But, you know, and again, we read this the other big group. We are always unto God a sweet savor of Christ. Both in them that live and in the perish. To the one we are a savor of death unto death, the other a savor of life unto life. And who is sufficient for these things?
Yeah. I was listening to Tommy's use the word perceive, how we perceive the universe. It's almost a fine line between how we perceive it. Are we perceiving it or are we judging it? It's almost the judgment. Perpetual rebellion in me.
Well,
my perceptions are.
No, I'm saying that the emptiness, literally, I'm not talking about the universe out here, I'm talking about your. It alters your surroundings. And if enough of us do it, it alters the physical universe. Can you imagine? I mean, that's the whole mystery. That's why the hurricane is such a fantastic example. Because the eye of the hurricane is at total peace and rest. And everything around them is circling madly. And it happens because there's a low pressure zone. That's why the hurricane starts, because that... You create a vacuum. I'm not saying it's easy.
It's not.
Especially, it's impossible if you think there's some there out there. But it has nothing to do with things that you perceive. It has to do with this mystery of God, which can't be perceived and understood with your mind. You can get close. The only thing your mind can do is say, my God, this is a mess. Get me out of here. No matter what it is. All right, take it, big guy. Pray for... Matt's family and for
Scott.
Scott's mother.